Greetings, welcome to The Dividing Line. I'm coming to you from the studio where for the past 2 days now we have been recording. So far, I don't know how many we've done. I think we're up near 100 at least, I think, somewhere around there. What do we call them? They're not really teaching videos. This is the Living Waters studio. And so Easy and Mark Spence have been taking different duties in asking, well, hundreds of questions were submitted initially. For example, what is the Masoretic text and is it important? Textus Receptus, Majority Text, Critical Text, Codex Vaticanus, Sinaiticus, Septuagint, Latin Vulgate, Dead Sea Scrolls. Those are some of the last ones we were working on. But we looked at the issue of the Trinity and all sorts of stuff like that. And so we're doing a lot of stuff, shall we say. And I'll be honest with you, it's some of the hardest work you'll ever do. Because even if I had had time to prepare, I generally don't do that. I generally go off the top of my head. And so I'm answering these questions off the top of my head. That makes it more real, I guess, in one sense. But they're bringing a bunch of people in, and the idea is to have all of this available online. So eventually you will be able to see all of this, not quite, well, actually pretty much from this perspective. Now that I'm looking at the cameras, this is pretty much what my perspective looks like, even though it would be from higher ups. So not quite that direction. But anyway, it's better than the attempt we made from the hotel up in Flagstaff a couple weeks ago. So hopefully it will not turn into a max headroom thing and we'll be able to get through this. But I didn't want an entire week to go by without remaining in contact with everybody. And of course, there's a lot of stuff going on right now. I have not had the time to listen to everything I would like to listen to. I was just listening to a portion of J.D. Greer's presentation that Dr. Robert Gagnon responded to yesterday. And so I have just seen stuff. We'll take 8-10 minute breaks every hour or so. And so I'd look at my phone and I would see stuff going on regarding the Southern Baptist Convention meeting and a resolution that is being put on the floor that basically praises critical theory and intersectionality as a insufficient but important tool and so on and so forth. And there's stuff going on regarding that. I don't know the details and things like that, but I did get to listen to the key portion of J.D. Greer's presentation. And I think one of the problems we're going to be facing, to be honest with you, is we recognize that it is inappropriate on one level to be partisan politicians. I think if you think of the Southern Baptist Convention, I think you can think of one particular church that is pretty well known for being partisan and, you know, filling the sanctuary with American flags and stuff like that. And I think most of us do not want to be there. At the same time, I think one of the challenges that we have is there is a situation that we are facing that is directly related to religious liberty, religious freedom, and a fundamental assault upon the Christian worldview that is coming from one political party that is enshrining in its party platform the fundamental denial of the central aspects of a Christian worldview. And what I'm hearing and what I heard in J.D. Greer's presentation was a very imbalanced attempt to say that both parties are doing the same thing in different ways. And when I say when I say that. In essence, what I heard him saying is that, sure, we may have abortion. He could have been, the list could have gone on and on. Not just abortion, but infanticide. We have genetic engineering. We have abortion as a sacrament of a religion that is being presented to us in the Democratic Party. And I think I think they need to, if there were really truth in advertising, it would be the Socialist Party, because that's really what we have going on there. But we likewise have the entire LGBTQ spectrum. And we have the support for the Equality Act, which is the end of constitutional government. It's the end of the freedoms of the Bill of Rights. It is the punishment of any kind of Christian speech in the United States. This passed the House, the Democrat-dominated House. We have to recognize this. And the homosexual profaning of marriage, the issue of transgenderism, the insanity that flows from forced agreement and celebration, the destruction of all women's privacy, women's sports, this level of cultural insanity is coming from one side. To attempt to balance that by talking about immigrants and the poor doesn't work. It doesn't work for many reasons. This nation has one of the most generous immigration policies of any industrialized nation in the world. We're not talking about immigrants, and we're not talking about how to treat immigrants. We're talking about an invasion. We're talking about the destruction of borders. And when you destroy the borders of a nation, you destroy the ability to hold that nation accountable before God. You destroy the ability to have law. You have to destroy the ability to have order. You have to destroy the ability to have any kind of social cohesion. So this is, J.D. Greer has capitulated to the language war and has given in to the redefining of terms. So that he uses the term immigrant. And of course, you have the ERLC involved with the immigration table and all the rest of that type of stuff. So it's the acceptance of leftist jargon that does not actually represent what we're talking, what should be being discussed from a Christian perspective at all. That's what's extremely troubling. He does not seem to see the level to which the LGBTQ people will go and to which the Soros-dominated open borders people will go to not only split, but to then utilize religious people to abuse the language, to take biblical categories about caring for the poor and transfer that into the kind of welfare state that is based upon theft that the left wants to present. That is an abuse of the Bible and an abuse of language. And here we're getting it from the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. It is an amazing thing to observe how quickly this has taken place. I can't get away from saying that somehow a message went out a little over a year ago at the MLK 50 thing, that, you know, now's the time. Launch. Go. Whatever your particular part in this entire crusade is, now's the time to go, because something happened at that point in time, and we are now seeing it. And we're seeing it in the Southern Baptist Convention. We're seeing it in the attempts of people to get leaders to answer meaningful questions. This is all going on at the same time. And I do not believe that the Southern Baptist Convention is the be all and end all of all things, but it is a bellwether. It is, we have seen so many denominations go straight down the social justice path into irrelevancy, into liberalism, heresy, a denial of the gospel, and everything else. And we are seeing the full-on attempt to bring this on within the Southern Baptist Convention as well. It's right in front of us. And so that's why I keep saying we are in a brief hiatus right now, where there is a very small pause produced by the current situation in the government, where the government can't seem to do anything. Actually, it's non-functional fundamentally. That will end. It will end either at the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, or in 2025. And so I don't know what the answer to all of that is. All I know is that all of us need to be thinking very, very, very seriously about how we are going to handle, the radical change that is coming our direction. And it will be, very much a radical change. And so to see these things and to recognize how the text of scripture is being utilized in a historical, not a historical as in no one's ever done this before, but a historical as in outside the context of these Bible believing denominations. We've seen people do this many times in the past, and we've seen the results, but it's happening again. So evidently we've gotten to a point where no one cares any longer. That it's too obvious. You can look back in history. You can see no one's looking back in history. Who knows about history? Who cares about this any longer? This is what's happening right in front of us. It is an amazing thing, to observe. And, we have to sound the alarm. And so, I'm not sure, the past couple of years, we had Tom Buck call in and sort of give a report. He's not able to do that today. He's actually on the floor and things are going on, and that's a resolution that, in one way, it's trying to say critical theory and intersectionality and stuff is insufficient. So it sounds like it's against it, but it actually ends up praising it in some ways as well. That's being dealt with. And so, you know, just pray for those who are seeking to in some way hold the line, there in the Southern Baptist Convention. Because they are like those in the PCA, OPC, and every place else that are likewise attempting to hold the line. And it's a challenging thing. So, we are going to, try to connect with you. And so we're actually going to open the phone lines, at 877-753-3341, 877-753-3341. We did this before and it seemed to work rather well. We'll find out. It may be a little bit challenging, but I think I've got a pretty solid connection here. I'm in a really good context in a sound studio. So it's easier than being on hotel Wi-Fi. That's for sure. Should be more effective. Right as I got started, something changed and there's a buzz and a hum now in the speakers above me, but, I'm not sure if you can hear that or not, but that's, not gonna harm anything. But as I said, for those of you just joining, we are on the sound stage, at, Living Waters, Ray Comfort's ministry here in, California. And, this is my second day here, and we are recording literally hundreds of videos, on all sorts of topics. I've obviously been dragging it. You know, we did stuff on the Trinity and apologetics and all that kind of stuff. But I've sort of been dragging in issues regarding text and manuscripts. And we were just talking about Sinaiticus and Vaticanus and all sorts of neat, fun stuff and the relationship between Vaticanus and P75. So we're doing some stuff no one else is probably going to be doing, just for the fun of it. And, so far everyone has seemed to think that was, pretty cool anyway. So, but, we'll open up the phones and, you can participate with us. I know it's a little bit short notice, but 877-753-3341, 877-753-3341. 753-3341 is the phone number. Now, some of you may be aware of the fact that there's been a little something going on social media and Twitter and Facebook. I didn't know about it when it first started, but I guess you can do these polls on Facebook. I don't think I've ever created a poll on Facebook. A poll was started that created a bracket of 32 webcasts, and you had to vote for your favorite webcast and whoever they were put up against. And pretty early on, I had to go, the program you're watching right now had to go up against Apologia Radio, and that was right after Jeff Durbin had a medical issue last week, and so much to my surprise, he utilized that to his best ability to try to get votes. When Apologia Radio and the Dividing Line went up against each other, he was trying to do the sympathy thing, talked about, you know, his bandages and how many shots he had gotten and all the rest of this stuff. It was, like I said, I've kept that to my hard drive for future use and reference and historical value and study and things like that. The Dividing Line got past our Apologia Radio. And what's sort of cool to me is that you had the Dividing Line, Apologia Radio, Sheologians, and Cultish. And we're all related to one another, basically. And in one way or the other, three of those four are produced in the Apologia Radio studios. And so that was neat. Cultish almost took out White Horse Inn. Good job, guys. But was up, you know, White Horse Inn's been around forever. And in the last round, Dividing Line took out the Bar Guys. I love the Bar Guys. We're all now in the final. And that is me and Dividing Line and Sheologians are in the final. And so it's not just me and Summer. It's Summer and Joy and, you know, good old Rich is back there and people have been talking about the Rich Cam and stuff like that. So it's not just us, but it should be good old fun. And this one, the Dividing Line Apologia Radio thing produced all sorts of funny memes and people were doing funny stuff. And like I said, Jeff's video is classic. But unfortunately, not all of the encounters have been overly friendly. And I've been a little taken aback by just the level of nastiness that has been launched by certain people out there in the internet. Now, we get so much nastiness every day that it's sort of like, oh, it's just another day on the internet. When people slander you and accuse you of being a heretic, and that's just waking up as me these days. But it's a little bit different when it's aimed at your friends or your daughter's friends and things like that. And it certainly highlighted the fact that the production of private little groups, little bunkers, shall we say, all over the internet seems to very, very, very much open up the possibilities of slander and gossip. And I think because of the connectivity that we have with one another in those realms, but then the anonymity, you're not looking at someone in the eye. You know, what you type just sort of seems to go away someplace. And it seems to create a context where biblical commands relating to language and honesty in speech and stuff like that, that all seems to go bye-bye. It seems to go away. And it has been educational. It certainly has been, has exposed the fact that there are people who find it easy to remain imbalanced while on the internet. real life seems to hit you from multiple different angles, and so it sort of helps to balance you out. But not on the internet. You can go into the echo chamber and just hear the echo chamber. And so that has sort of been shown in some of the stuff that was going on, and people trying to, you know, get other people involved in the voting and all the rest of that kind of stuff. And it's educational. But I would say to some of you out there who just have lost your balance in your animosity towards certain people, I really wonder if you take that kind of bitterness into the fellowship of your church, or if you even are involved in the fellowship of your church these days. That's a sad thing to observe. So anyways, I guess the final vote is tomorrow. And I will be here working. We've got a roundtable to do in the afternoon. I think Brother Ramos is going to be joining us, Emilio Ramos, and we're going to be recording stuff here. And I'm just not going to be able to be involved with all the fun that'll be going on. I did, you know, post what I thought was a edifying and useful verse this morning. To be a guidance for people in this matter. And that is, you know, children, you know, honor your father and your mother. That's a biblical principle that I think we should follow, because it's first command with promise, and it remains valid, you know. And, so, you know, some people respond by saying you shall not provoke your children to wrath, but there's nothing, I'm not provoking anyone to wrath. I'm just saying, you know, you might want to honor your father and your mother and that type of thing. And we all need to be good Christians about all of this. So, the memes are great. There is this one really, really funny meme, of this guy standing in like a tuxedo type thing. And then there's this really creepy guy creeping up on him, and they one was the dividing line. The creepy guy was theologians creeping up on him and stuff. I imagine there's going to be some great memes out there. I guess someone put up a meme where I was Jason Bourne, and now it's called the White Supremacy, because it's me. And of course, Summer's maiden name was White. And then people got all upset about that because of the color. You can't look when people think that songs like White Christmas or movies like White Christmas are part of, you know, racism and stuff like that. What can I say? I guess I'm just going to change my last name or something, because you can't reason the folks on that kind of thing. So that's just sort of how it goes. But tomorrow should be interesting. And so let's just let the longest running program win. Since we started the dividing line before someone was born. So anyways, there you go. All right. We're going to try to get some of these phone calls. I will admit I've been here since 7:30 this morning. It's 3:30 in the afternoon. I have talked on, I don't know how many different subjects. So I'm sort of brain dead, but we wanted to connect up with folks. And so we're doing the best we can. And this is the second day I've done it. So I've got one more day. Tomorrow it's going to be tough. So let's take some of the phone calls and see if this is even going to work. If it doesn't, then who knows what. But let's talk with Blake in San Diego. Hi, Blake.
Hey, Dr. White. It's an honor and a privilege to talk to you. Ever since I watched your debate with Dr. Strawbridge, that has totally convinced me that I am a Reformed Baptist at heart.
Okay.
So this is my question. So I go to actually a Southern Baptist church, and they don't embrace, you know, the social justice and all that, but, so to really not take up too much of your time, because I know you guys are on time schedule and everything. So, do you believe that some of the churches that are under the umbrella of, you know, Southern Baptist Church, do you think it would be possible that some of those churches would actually leave the Southern Baptist, association because of the whole social justice thing? Or do you think they are just, you know, so deceived that they're going to just stay, with the SBC? I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I would like to be optimistic. I'd like to think that there'll be people who will stand up and take notice and educate themselves and provide a meaningful response to the influx of an unbiblical definition of justice and worldview categories that would include critical theory and intersectionality and open borders and the destruction of meaningful societal norms and things like that. I would like to think that would take place, but at the same time, I see that certain high positions within the convention have already been taken over by individuals who clearly have no desire or interest in leaving. They're going to continue to use those places as mechanisms of exerting their authority. And so who would be leaving would be the congregations that do not have any desire to donate to the cooperative program when those cooperative program funds or the International Mission Board funds are going to be used to promote social justice causes and the like, or used to promote the ERLC. If the ERLC continues to function as a social justice mechanism of the woke church. And so I would think that what they'd be losing are their conservative congregations. The problems with that then is that only accelerates the process within the SBC of liberalizing the boards of the seminaries, and hence increasing the speed at which those seminaries then begin to hire more and more professors who are to the left, and basically see the undoing of the conservative resurgence in a relatively short period of time, and doing it in a way that I don't think was ever expected. I don't think that the direction of the flow, the direction of the societal energy, I don't think that was really something that was in the minds of most of the conservatives. I think they didn't see this coming in the way that it's entering into the convention. So I'd like to be optimistic and hope for that, but I'll be honest with you. I don't see it right now. And just listening to Dr. Greer's presentation, and seeing other material from what's going on at the convention, it seems like wokeness is the flavor of the day there at the SBC. So that does not bode well for the future.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Just I don't have much hope for the SBC as well, and Lord willing, by God's sovereign grace, that they just get delivered from the social justice movement and go right back to the gospel.
Well, you know, it could result in the founding of a yet another. I mean, Baptists are good at founding new denominations. They certainly have a lot of experience in doing it. So you could end up with a new association of solid churches that would try to mirror things. I don't know. I don't know. I just know that. Right now, there seems to be a whole lot of wokeness going on, and this is a fairly new development in that context. It's not a fairly new development. You can hear the same kind of rhetoric in liberal denominations that have gone down the wrong path 20, 30 years ago. It's the same subject, same topic, same game plan all the way along. It's just now the Southern Baptist turn. So. Anyway, Blake, thank you. Hopefully it's a little bit cooler in San Diego than it is here in L.A. It's been pretty warm the past several days. So.
Not really.
Well, it's supposed to cool down over the next few days. So hopefully tomorrow it'll be at least a little bit nicer than it's been. It was like 106 yesterday. It was ridiculous. So I get to go home and cool off. So anyways, all right, thanks for your call.
Yeah. Thank you for talking.
All right. God bless. Thank you. Okay. Let's, not sure if my brain is up to this, but we'll try it. Let's talk to Brian about supralapsarianism. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Dr. White. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I have just had a question over the years as I have engaged your materials, and you have been quite clear in everything that I have seen in distancing yourself from the view called equal ultimacy.
Right.
That God's work of reprobation is exactly the same as his work of election and salvation. And from my study on the matter, it seems as though one can be a supralapsarian without holding to equal ultimacy. And I was just curious, and perhaps it's been staring me in the face all along, but I've never seen you address the issue of infra versus supra and where you stand on that and how you understand that in relation to equal ultimacy. And so I just thought I might give you a call and ask you today, since you were taking some calls.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't understand the issue of lapsarianism. It has to do with the logical relationship of certain elements of the decree of God, and specifically where the fall of man is to be placed within the context of the decrees of God. And so there is a sense in which it is an artificial controversy, because we can't really push ourselves into the counsel of God and experience the logical order of his thoughts especially in answering questions such as, does God engage in election in light of the fallenness of man, or is election prior to the fallenness of man and it's not even an experience. It's not really even a logical order. It's just simply in the reasoning of God. And I'm not sure of the relevance of it, other than it helps us to categorize things. And I have a feeling that we might end up getting to heaven and realizing it was a complete waste of time. But the tendencies over time for infralapsarian and supralapsarian, the tendencies toward infralapsarian has been away from a continued emphasis upon election toward a more man-centered perspective. And supralapsarian, people would say, has been a tendency toward hyper-Calvinism and a loss of emphasis upon personal responsibility. And so obviously in each one, there has to be the recognition of biblical balance and a desire to maintain that biblical balance. And so what I have said a number of times in the past, and I'm only on one screen here and I didn't have time to look it up, but there is a very, I think, useful discussion of this matter with a modified supralapsarian discussion by Robert Raymond in his New Systematic Theology.
Yes, yes.
I think it does a good job in the modified form of making sure to maintain the balance that keeps supralapsarianism from flowing off into the radicalized forms that it ended up taking in Dutch theology, and in the experience of some in the Netherlands, even to this day. I've threatened, and just haven't gotten around to doing it, just simply because it's a matter of time, but I have said that I'm going to do a discussion titled Against Calvinism, to focus upon what I encountered when I was in Amsterdam and then in a little bit farther out in the Netherlands. And the fact that there are, in the Bible Belt, there are so many churches where Reformed churches, where only a tiny percentage of the congregation partakes in the Lord's Supper because of a complete lack of any grounding for a confidence that one has been accepted in Christ. You don't partake of the supper in their minds if you do not have an issue of assurance, if you're not assured of your relationship with God. And so even the elders will not partake because they believe it to be a presumptuous thing to assume that you can have that level of assurance is to partake of the supper. I mean, this is a radicalized corruption of the doctrine of the supper. You don't see Calvin doing this. You see Calvin guarding the table. You see Calvin being willing to stand before people with swords to guard the table. But it had nothing to do with what it has mutated into in the Netherlands. So I've been thinking about doing something like that. So if you seemed familiar with Raymond's work, and I'll be honest with you, it's been a few years now since I worked through it and took a look at it. I have it in a file somewhere. I don't have time to look for it on my computer right now, but if you are familiar with it, I think you might find his modified listing, because he goes through the infra and the supra and then says, I think this would be the better way to put it. I think that tends to be a useful illuminating discussion.
Yes, sir. Well, that's helpful, and I appreciate it. And I know certainly that you are busy, and so who am I to make recommendations? But I would certainly love to see something like that presentation you just mentioned. And I know you've been doing some stuff on the Lord's Supper with Apologia recently, and
oh yeah,
things like that would fit. But obviously, that's between you and the Lord. But I know that I would definitely love to see that if you ever got the time.
Oh yeah, I definitely want to do it. But it is the type of thing that would take more preparation than I normally have time for right now, unless it's on a subject that I'm already dealing with. But yeah, I'm definitely gonna keep it in mind. I want to do it because it is an important thing. So thank you very much for your call,
well,
Brian.
You, sir.
All right, God bless.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. Let's talk to Brent in Wisconsin. Hi, Brent.
Hello, Dr. White. Just first off, just thank you for your ministry. It's been an extreme blessing for me over the years, and also especially towards your honest, engagement with Roman Catholics. You're one of the few apologists who actually dare to touch that subject, and having come from a Roman Catholic background, part of becoming Christian, I really appreciate that you do that with kindness and respect, but at the same time that you hold to truth. So,
Thank you.
So I guess my question is just basically it's Old Testament theology, mainly just kind of hermetization. Basically, it has to do with Joshua chapter 7, Sin of Achan, and I guess kind of brought up sort of in the social justice discussion, just this kind of was brought up to me, I guess, how to reconcile Joshua chapter 7 with kind of the passages on individual responsibility, like in Deuteronomy, where it's like Deuteronomy 24:16, that fathers should not be put to death for their sons, but sons to be put to death for their fathers, and then similar passage, you know, like Ezekiel chapter 18. That's my question.
Oh, yeah. Well, what you have in the issue of Achan is federal headship, a basic understanding in Old Testament reality that there is a connection in the families. In fact, that's how the land was passed down from family to family. That's why you have the Levitical law in regards to raising up seed to your brother and the whole nine yards. What you're talking about in the other places is specifically, at least one of them anyways that I heard, I was still looking at Joshua 7 when you gave the other text, but is the repetition of a proverb amongst the people that kept them from repenting at the prophetic message. I guess one was from Deuteronomy. Context of the Deuteronomy one?
Deuteronomy, it was 24:16, which fathers should not be put to death for their sons, nor shall sons be put to death for their fathers. Everyone shall be put to death for his own sin.
Okay, yeah, that's part of the law code that is specifically prohibiting, for example, kings to push off their or people with authority or power to push off their punishment upon somebody else. And I think that needs to be recognized. That's part of the Deuteronomic law code. It is not. Some people have used that. For example, Jewish apologists will use that to say that you could not have something along the lines of substitutionary atonement that is voluntarily undertaken by the son or something like that. And the one in Ezekiel is talking about the proverb, the fathers ate the grapes and the children's teeth have been set on edge, which was being used by the people as a mechanism for avoiding the prophetic call to repentance. They're saying, hey, it doesn't matter whether we repent ourselves or not. We're being punished for our father's sins. And so we can just continue on and not heed the call to repentance because our teeth have been set on edge by what somebody else has done. And the prophets were saying no. And through the prophets said, this will not be repeated amongst my people any longer. So the difference between the Deuteronomic text and the law code that is laid out there is that it is prohibiting the transfer of punishment inappropriately based upon having certain having certain power and authority to be able to do that. And the other is talking about the fact that God deals with his people in a federal fashion. And so when the people of Israel go against Ai, they are going as a covenanted people. And so Achan's sin is in a different context than the law code. This was not a situation where you had just one of the standard violations, theft or something like that. Achan is representing Israel and Israel's God in a covenanted relationship. And so when he commits high-handed sin, he is doing so in a context outside of what would be brought before the judges or something like that, because and this did come up in a question here on the program that we're doing, the recording that we're doing yesterday. And that is, God is using Israel to bring judgment against the pagan peoples. They are functioning in an almost priestly fashion at this point in bringing judgment against the pagan peoples. And so there is a special holiness that is involved and a special representation that is involved in that particular context, which is what brings the federal issue in. And it hasn't, what it has to do is with the holiness of the people. And so the federal headship part is the removal of that kind of pollution from the people and the land. And that's what's represented there. It's not an issue of simple personal responsibility for stealing a sheep. In this situation, it's the entire people's responsibility to be holy unto the Lord and to be utilized by him in the fashion they're being utilized. So I think that's where the difference would be found in what happens with Achan and the fact that you have he and his family and his doggies and kitties and so on and so forth who are stoned. This is a representation of the removal of evil from what's supposed to be a holy people who are supposed to be functioning as priests unto God, in essence, in being used to bring punishment upon not the Gentiles, but upon the pagan people. I think that's what provides the different context, because unless I'm in error, and I could be, I think that's the only example we have of that. And it was a unique situation in Israel's history in going into the land and the calling that was hers at that particular point in time. So that's where I would see the difference between those texts.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. And just to give you a little bit of encouragement, trying to introduce my local church to basically your material about textual criticism. Tried to, I guess, address that hole. I'm a millennial who's read the unabridged version of the Gulag Archipelago, so obviously I do not support what I guess a lot of my peers are voting for or rooting for. So anyway.
Oh yeah. Keep trying, especially over the next couple of years. It's going to be a challenge for you. But how many pages is the unabridged edition?
Oh, the unabridged edition. It was well over 1,000. It's like dragging your soul over broken glass.
Was that reading the actual text, or was it an audiobook?
Oh, I read the actual text. I got all three volumes in my bookshelf.
There you go. That looks good on the shelf. Eventually you run out of space on the shelves. But anyways, hey, Brent, thank you for your call.
All right, take care. God bless.
All right, God bless. Bye-bye. Yeah, let's just take Jonathan and we'll wrap stuff up because, like I said, I've been here all day long and my brain's starting to ooze out of my ears. So let's talk to Jonathan in Texas. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello?
Hello, Jonathan. And Jonathan got a sign from God that he had to go someplace else. Now, we may have just made him hold so long that he dropped off. But Jonathan wanted to know about 1 Corinthians 14 and sign gifts. That would have gotten everybody excited. That's okay. No, I appreciate the phone calls we've gotten today the fact that probably a lot of folks are focused upon what's going on in the SBC right now. I fully understand that. I think I put a note out on Facebook at the beginning of the week. Let's pray for the SBC. By the way, I have not had time. Again, this when we're here, we're focused, and I've got to drive elsewhere. I only got to start listening to a very short portion of the Tom Askell, Dwight McKissick debate that took place. I've had people asking me, are you going to comment on it? If I get a chance and if I have the strength to get it loaded up for the drive back, it's a 6-hour drive back. So I'll get to it as soon as I can. There's just so many things I'm supposed to be getting to and listening to, but I do want to listen to it and try to provide a comment on it. There are some books coming out soon that I want to comment on that are very, very important. So yeah, lots to get to. Just only so many hours in the day to get to it. So there you go. That's what we'll be doing. So tomorrow, continuing here. A roundtable in the afternoon, Pastor Emilio Ramos, myself, Mark Spence, and maybe one or two others here in the studio. Pray for that and the utilization of all the material that we've put together here that will be used of the Lord while we still have the time to be doing this and getting this type of information out. It's a blessing to be able to do so. We'll be able to link to this material eventually and things like that as well. So it's very encouraging along those lines. Safe travel home. And then we've got a lot more to do, a lot more coming up. This is going to be a very, 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 very busy season. And so your prayers and your support very much appreciated. And if you happen to be in Facebook tomorrow, hey, I just simply allow anyone to just do whatever the Lord would have you to do on that Facebook poll. That's better be all I should say about it. I personally really am really excited. I think it's really cool that it's dividing line in Sheologians, because Sheologians has only been around for a couple of years. So talk about finding a niche audience and scratching an itch, getting to, well, it is interesting. Now I think back. Well, obviously all the feminism stuff had begun long before this, but now there's a whole group of people being exposed to issues relating to feminism, egalitarianism, complementarianism, that when Sheologians started, you wouldn't have expected that that's where the conversation would be. Now it is. So there's a real need for that voice and a real need for that that presence there. And so I'm very thankful for what the Lord's done there. And if all of this discussion on Facebook ends up with more people listening and more people supporting all the programs that were involved, you know, that's great. We're all in this together. At least we should be. I'm just really excited that the Dividing Line, Apologia Radio, Sheologians, Cultish, that there are so many people that are thankful for what's being done by this group. If some of you don't know, the three, Apologia Radio, Sheologians, and Cultish, are all coming out of Apologia Studios, which is a function of Apologia Church, and I am one of the elders of Apologia Church now, so we all sort of feel like one big family. And so whoever wins tomorrow, it's going to be a win for me. And if the Dividing Line wins tomorrow, that's a win for Summer as well, and Joy, and Apologia, and everything else. And so in essence, we've already won. So there's that's cool. And I think the meme collection that we will be able to download out of this will be classic. But how do you keep meme collections? Now I think about it. You know, it's one thing. Remember when we had scrapbooks and picture books and stuff like that? How do you keep memes? I guess you could put them in a folder or something. But how do you – I don't know. Will we be sitting around on whatever the future edition of an iPad is when we're old people? And some people would say you already are. Going, hey, remember this meme, or remember this GIF, or something like that. Rich, by the way, has now announced that he will be, well, voting for AOMIN. Well, that's you. So you're voting for yourself. Okay. I have to be careful how I'm voting here, because, you know, I have to think about, you know, family and church and, you know, all the rest of this kind of stuff. Rich says, I don't have divided alliances. So it's pretty straight up forward for him. And so if you're a fan of the Rich Cam, you know what to do. That's all there is to it. So, you know, I hadn't put much thought trying to figure out how to put the her into, who knows what? I don't know. I'll have to think about that. But yeah, you know, we don't want to divide churches and families and stuff like that. But anyway, we'll see. Who could have foreseen these things? There was a time when I just wouldn't even go into Facebook because I hated it so much. I hated its interface. And I still do, but I'm there and I'm stuck with it. So. What can I say? Anyways, we'll wrap things up a little bit early today since we lost the Twitter is worse than Facebook. In some ways, but Facebook allows you to slander in private groups. Twitter, you just have to be out there. You're just out there doing your thing. So there is a difference between the two. Anyways, we'll wrap things up. Thanks for watching Dividing Line. I'll be back, Lord willing, on Friday. So next week should be fairly normal, though I don't know that my brain will be recovered from the brain drain of being asked question after question after question on dozens of different topics from all over the map. But we'll hopefully be ready to go next week and maybe have a report on the SBC from the people that were there depending on what has taken place and what their feelings are. So maybe we'll be able to do that next week. So thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate Living Waters for allowing me to use such a wonderful little studio spot here. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for watching. God bless.